Well, like many of the episodes on Surfing the Quicksand, sometimes we're dealing with hard stuff, and this is going to be one of those. But my hope is that today's episode does some education, does some driving of curiosity, and more importantly, helps you think about difficult conversations that you may need to have with your loved ones in the future. We're talking about end-of-life care. Hospice, palliative care, and some things that we may only know from the movies, and even then, not so well. But I really wanted to bring in a special conversation with someone who's been through it in a number of different ways and has a new role in that hospice space that I think people don't think about. And I'm excited to bring my friend Lori Reese to your ears and eyes today on this episode of Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Vines. On today's episode of Surfing the Quicksand, it is kind of quintessential to what I hope I get to do with this podcast, which is help midlife women get unstuck. And sometimes the things that have us stuck are things we don't want to face, or when it's time for us to face, we just don't know enough about to be able to feel like we can move forward in a way that feels thoughtful and planful and that we're making the best decisions. And sometimes those are heavy topics. I wanted to talk about end-of-life care in today's episode. You may be familiar with terms like hospice and palliative care, and maybe you just know the terms, maybe you don't even know those terms, but it's possible that many of us as midlife women are going to get to that point where we're going to need to know a little bit more because we're caring for aging parents, or we're in our own lives and our own journeys with end of life at some point where a little bit of knowledge is going to go a long way. I'm bringing in somebody to talk today who's a very dear friend of mine and not actually a hospice medical care professional. I really wanted someone who could bring in a unique from her life story about what she learned about hospice care, but also she's someone who was so moved by the power that having thoughtful end-of-life care can do for a patient, for a family, for people to heal, that she has turned this into a kind of an extracurricular passion of being on a board of a large hospice organization and help really set an organization as an ambassador to what hospice care can mean for people. So we're going to talk today about her experience. And by the way, she's one of my NAPO frolleagues. You've heard that term before, friend plus colleague. And so she's part of the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. In fact, she's on the board of that too. My guest today is Lori Reese, who owns Consider It Done of, and she's based in central Pennsylvania. Welcome, Lori.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
I'm so pleased that you are open to care, talk about this very personal story. And honestly, like I've had a lot of my frolics on, we're talking about things that aren't necessarily organizing and productivity. Sometimes we're just talking about these meaningful parts of life where lessons have been learned and lessons can be shared. I do, however, want to kind of get grounded on who you are and who you've been professionally, who you work with. Let's talk about that first so people can
Yeah,
kind of get to
sure.
know who Lori Reese is.
Yeah, so I own a business based in Central PA, as you said, called Consider It Done. And we're coming up on 12 years of working in the senior space. We help older adults through life transitions, mostly when they're downsizing and facing a big change in their life, going from a home where they've raised, their families, downsizing to a retirement community, or just a, moving to be closer to family again. We also help folks who've lost a loved one deal with the left behind treasures. So, helping provide estate support to folks who need help filling in the gaps of going through that process. So that's the space where we've really been thriving the past 12 years.
I think people may not realize when it comes to organizers, we come in a million different flavors, right? And the idea that people can specialize in a population that they feel so connected to serving, right? What we do is service, right? In the truest
Yes.
sense. So for you to be connected so deeply to the seniors, I think also feels in line with some of this other experience, right? You really have built a
Yeah.
life and career around working with the population with
Yeah.
A lot of heavy needs, but often all the same needs, maybe with the volume turned up or down.
Yeah, and it really, when I look back at my life experiences, it makes sense. It didn't in the beginning, but now I look back and everything that I've experienced, it really has led me to this space. So all around, from my business to my hospice volunteering. So I do feel like I've landed where I'm supposed to be.
I love that. So let's get into hospice and kind of end of life care. And I want to see, and this is just a conversation, right, between,
Yeah.
again, someone who knows very little and someone who knows a great deal more. So first, take us a little bit on kind of an educational journey. Like, what is hospice? What is the stuff that's in all of this space?
Yeah, so the hospice service is designed for care and support of patients who are seeking comfort and care in the last phase of an incurable illness. So this is meant to provide comfort. It's not giving up. It's providing these extra services through an interdisciplinary team to add value, make that last phase of life more comfortable, more full. It does, hospice is not designed to hasten or postpone death, but it's there to be a service to help that next transition be as comfortable as possible.
Now, a lot of people have no experience with this, and their only exposure is like in movies, right? And
Yeah.
can be, oh, hospice came in, and 10 minutes later in the movie, the person's gone, right? It was overnight things. And I know people who have gone through this where it has been very, very quick, right? Hospice came in on a Saturday and they've passed on a Sunday. And I've known hospice has come on a Tuesday and a year later, they're still around, right? It's
Yes,
not necessarily the witching
yeah,
hour, right?
exactly. And I think that there's this misconception. And it's understandable. It's like you mentioned the scenario, they come in on a Saturday, the person passes on Sunday. So now that someone said, oh, hospice came in and then they died right away. Well, it's not that hospice hastened that situation. It was just where that patient was in that phase of their illness. So it is really hard not to associate that, and I think that's where the bad stigma comes from, that association. And so I'm trying to shed some light on the services and how to help people see the full picture of that. And my own journey is a big example of why I want to share that.
Yes, please start that. I was just about to
Yeah,
ask, yeah.
yeah. So, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to
No,
jump ahead.
you're good. You're
But,
right on time.
I've had a few experiences with hospice, and my first one being the most impactful and what has led me in the direction, not just with my volunteerism as with hospice, but also with my business. I had my niece was diagnosed in her 20s with brain cancer, and it was terminal brain cancer. And she lived for 2 years with it, thanks to some trials and special, care, et cetera, things that helped extend her life. But at the, we all, it was terminal. And I will never forget, I had no experience with hospice whatsoever. But I went to visit her. It was on a Good Friday, before Easter, when I arrived, because my family lives in Kentucky, so I flew home, and I arrived to find out that she was actually meeting with hospice when I arrived. She was 22 at the time, and was going through the process of enlisting their services. And so I'm like, oh, okay, I'm thinking, oh, this is a big deal. I had no idea that she would be gone 2 days later. But what I would say is, in those 2 days, the care, we had nurses coming in. They brought in extra, comfort measures with bedding, things to make her comfortable, things for her to hold on to, medication adjustments to make her comfortable. And my niece was very lucid for a lot of this time. And it was also helpful to us to have the nurses there that were experienced in this field to help answer our questions and guide us, because we had no idea, about what to expect. And so they also allowed us, this was Easter weekend, and
Right.
some of us, some of the family was going wanted to go to church. And so we took, because we felt that was very important. But we took comfort knowing that there was extra care there for us, for her. And the day that she passed, our entire family was there with her. The medical staff with hospice came right away. I think that there was a transition with the nurses at the time, but they were right there for us. And we were all there. It was the first time in my life that I had actually witnessed someone pass. And that's when I really had a transformational moment, that this was an honor to be there with her. I mean, I had been talking to her for days, those days, and to be someone, and even with my family, her father, like, to be there for her. And to be there when she literally passed was just life changing. And that is really what changed my perspective. For me, the hospice experience was a very positive one. And then we went on to have subsequent hospice services for my father-in-law, who had dementia. And that was a more drawn out, more what we're accustomed to, and someone that's older, in their 80s, who had been ill, who had been declining. But at a point, it was recommended to us that they come in, and so we had them there. And it was about, my memory is not perfect on this, but it may have been about 2 weeks. But they were there all the time, and he was in a memory care unit. And but so he had the caregivers, the nurses on staff at the memory care unit, but he also had additional help with hospice. So there were additional caregivers coming in, checking on him, sitting with him. They also made sure there were things there for us, just the support needs that we had, chaplains coming in. So that was a different experience from that I had with my niece, who was at home. Versus my father-in-law, who had been in a care community.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and I'm so sorry that for your losses, 'cause really feels like powerful experiences, and I love that you're a reflection on the honor of being there in the end. Something that you can never prepare for, and you don't really know how to put into words afterwards, but obviously impactful for your life. I was really kind of thinking about how you're talking about, gosh, they had to kind of prepare us as we were going through things. We didn't really know what was happening. What do you recall about that kind of that pacing of explaining to you what was happening and preparing loved ones for how this would go?
I think that when the social worker with hospice was explaining to our family, I'll just speak with my niece, since that was a little unique because it was a younger person. For her parents, for myself, we weren't, we knew like what was coming, but they did outline like the process, like, And they explained what they were doing as far as the treatment, the comfort treatment. They talked about that. And I also want to say she was lucid enough to sign all the papers and to tell the hospice social worker, you know, she understood. The hospice social worker spoke to her about the process, about what was happening. That was a private conversation, but we knew that that's what been happening. Her father was with them, her during that conversation. So she knew well. And so we wanted to support what she wanted, right? This was her saying, okay, it's time. I fought a good fight. So as far as what the social worker explained to us was really just preparing us and explaining to us what they were going to do to make her comfortable so we would understand what was going to happen. Also, just explaining what happens with the body, things not to be concerned about, things like if something does happen, a certain, you know, thing we might witness, to let them know right away, and also signs that we're getting closer to the end, and not to be to prepare us so we're not upset and, you know, or surprised, because it's they prepared us for what would be normal. Might
Yeah.
not be normal to us, but like, it's okay. This is going to happen. You know, this is what you can expect. And that was really, really helpful. And, you know, it's important to know those things because, you know, I imagine and I envision families like ours sitting with their loved ones, not knowing what to expect if you don't have the guidance of hospice, to not know what's normal and to have this panic. But for us, we had these things explained, so we knew not to panic, but we also had an extra awareness, like, okay, this is normal. We are getting close here, you know. And it was helpful to know those signs, because then we could let our other family members know, like, hey, if the ones that weren't there, if they wanted to come, to call them in, like, because we would feel that things were getting closer. So we would not have known that without the guidance of a hospice care professional.
You know what it's reminding me of? I don't have children, so I haven't been through birth and maternity, but gosh, aren't there a million books to help prepare women and families for what that impact to the body process is and how you're going to get close to birth. And there are doulas and nurses and doctors and everybody who will say they know, they can read what's going on, say, okay, we're at this phase, we're at that phase. There's shared experience. There's every woman who's ever had a baby can tell other people. We don't have the benefit of saying, oh, you died. How did that go for you? Right? We don't have that firsthand. That's it. We don't have that firsthand voice in the room.
And I have to say, Kathy, I think what's really also changed for me in this experience is that we do put so much preparation on a birth, you know, whether it's I'm like you, I've never had my own, but in our family, it's like everybody's preparing. We're doing what we can to support the mother. We're doing what we can, the family. What can we do? We're, you know, buying all these things. We're doing all these things to make sure mom is comfortable postpartum, like all these things. And I think it's really important that, you know, and I know this is hard for a lot of people it's become very, I'm passionate about it, so it flows from my mouth much easier than it might be for some to hear, but to put more, like, just as much emphasis on the preparation of your last, this other life transition. This is the other biggest moment in our life, transitioning out of this world. And, you know, to make that as comfortable and meaningful, and to have these services that can provide that emotional support, physical, medical support, spiritual support, like, to have that is just a beautiful thing, you know? And I get it. There's going to be some deaths that are not, it's just going to be, could be a harder depending on the illness, but to have that extra support and to have that plan. I mean, there's, and that is the move. There's, you mentioned death doulas. I'm not an expert on that, but it is something that there are more people going into that to help provide families with that support in addition to hospice. They're not a replacement for hospice, but a complement to hospice. So.
I think there are so many deaths that are not anticipated, not planned, tragic, horrific. Right. So this is not about everyone will have the comfort to be able to say the flexibility to say,
I
oh, this
know.
is I'm going to choose this
True.
option. We're talking
Right.
about people with terminal illnesses,
Yes.
people who are elderly, who are, their death is
True. It's,
inevitable.
yeah,
So we're not
your
talking about everybody.
incurable type of disease. I mean, the types of illnesses that we generally see are cancers, renal failure, congestive heart failure. Those are just a few examples. Kidney, last stage kidney failure, when someone's been on dialysis for, a very long time. Dementia. Those are the examples of the types of hospice patients that we see.
The other thing you mentioned, which struck me, is you just listen terminal illnesses and renal, and then we have dementia. And your niece and many people, up until a long depth into this journey, are lucid, are aware, can participate in the process, being educated, providing their wishes, all of that. But the dementia story is different, right? Those folks often have not been able to participate in a conversation like that for a long time, let alone at the end. How is that different, do you think, for you or for the family to know that, oh gosh, dad isn't able to kind of speak for himself and his wishes, so it's kind of up to us to navigate that?
I think that's a great question, Kathy, and a hard one. And I'm trying to reflect back. I mean, my father-in-law has been gone since 2014, and so it's been a long time. And navigating that, I mean, first we were lucky. He recognized what was going on, and he chose himself to go to memory care. I mean, that's a gift that he was that aware enough to know that he needed a different level of care. But once he went, it was like a switch flipped, and he could just let down the putting on the show, so to speak, trying to keep up with the daily life. And, it was the caregivers at the retirement community that helped us know when the time when it was time we should bring someone in. So when it I think that what the best thing that a family can do is, if you are acting in the best interest in providing them care and compassion, and that at the end of the day, that's what it's about. If they haven't been able to express their desires, but you're doing something that's going to bring them added comfort, I don't think that you can go wrong with that. I hope I answered your question.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that role of agency at the end is going to vary for people. And so it is why we're having this conversation now, right? What are the conversations we can be having with our loved ones? And I'm not even talking about, hey, are your parents in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and death somewhere between 1 and 20 years from now, right? What are the conversations you should be having? I'm also talking about the people who do get ill. And we had very close friends where one spouse had cancer, and it was terminal. And it was hard because I think it's hard to engage with a family member with a terminal disease in a way to talk about hospice or end of life without feeling like you're giving up on them.
Right.
And not that I know the inner workings of what was going on in their kind of nuclear home, but I think even everyone, gosh, how do you be on team whatever, and but also still say, oh, by the way, if death's around the corner, how do you want to do this? Right? It's really hard.
It is really hard. And I also had an experience about a year or so ago with family friends as well that was going through that. And I knew they did not want to hear. I knew them well enough to know that I couldn't step into that space. And it was really, really hard for me. And I think that's part of, having this conversation with you, hoping that there are more people listening to try to get that stigma that hospice is not giving up. And hopefully, the patient is involved. Like you said, if this is a terminal illness or a long lasting illness, end stage illness, having that patient be involved. And I will tell you too that doctors aren't trained on this. Doctors are trained to save lives. When they go to school, there's not a course on hospice care. At least that, the medical director that I've talked to with our organization has said they didn't get that training. And so they're working to provide. So our organization is helping to provide education to medical students. We're close to a College of Medicine. So our medical director does provide some education there. And I'm really glad for that because there's generally a doctor, they're focused to save lives, right? So it's not a conversation that they're going to have. But we do try, a lot of the hospice organizations are, tr they are trying to, establish their services so that the caseworkers at the hospitals know about us, or at the doctor's offices. They're out there. The hospices have people out there trying to educate the community and the medical professionals on the services that are provided. And we haven't touched on it yet. And when you're ready to talk about the palliative aspect, but that's really, really important as well. Totally different from hospice.
Well, let's go there now. I had another question, but
Yeah.
this is better.
Oh.
Let's transition to talking about
Okay.
palliative care, because
Yeah.
that is
Yeah.
another one that I think I'm not sure 10 years ago I had heard the word palliative, and I don't know that a lot of
Yeah.
other people had either. They might have known the word hospice, but palliative, and I think that's spelled PALLIATIVE, in case anybody's
Yeah.
listening and want to
Yeah.
know what
Yeah.
she's saying.
Yep, you got it.
Palliative care is a different end of life care. I'm going to tell you a story that's,
Yeah.
this is, it's kind of a humorous one, where we were visiting a friend and who was at, nearing the end of his days. And, but, again, kind of lucid enough to have visitors and talk. And he said, yeah, they're moving me to the palliative floor today. And my husband, who had never heard the word, said, that sounds great. And I said, okay, where's that come from? Well, he definitely thought he meant patio, right? Like, oh, you're going to be out on the
Oh,
patio floor and you're going to have sun and
so
light.
nice.
And I was like, that does sound great. But I said, oh, my husband's never heard that word. And he's not the only one, right? So
Yeah.
now that I've said the word 10 times, let's talk about palliative care.
Yeah. So it's interesting because same here, Kathy. I mean, palliative, I even a couple months ago talked to one of our the staffs at the hospice, asking them again to explain because I wanted to make sure that I was very clear on the differences. And palliative care is when a patient is still seeking curative treatment. So I think back to my niece, let's say, and she was going through, she had had surgery, she was in chemotherapy, seeking cure. Palliative care would have been an option for her. And what does that mean? So it means that there's coordination of care. You have someone helping you through the care plan. It's helping, again, providing some comfort measures while you're going through treatment, but you are seeking a cure. So it might be, and this can apply to hospice or palliative, but it could be medical, medical devices to make life a little easier, a wheelchair, a bedside commode, those types of things to comfort, hospital bed. Again, you're not been given a terminal six, a diagnosis. So, when it comes to palliative care, there doesn't have to be that end light, like that prognosis that you are in the last phase of your illness. You could use palliative care and then be fine, but it's there. So I think that even with our elderly population that are going through, they have serious health diagnoses and they're going through treatments, and it's worth, if the local hospice organization or hospital offers palliative care, it is worth asking about. I mean, why wouldn't you want extra comfort things that are covered, right? Usually covered by insurance. And that is another whole category, topic we would get into. But I would say, like, see what they have to offer that's going to make your life easier, you and your family.
So it feels like or the core difference between hospice and palliative is hospice is saying we're no longer treating. We're going to let nature take its course, but we're no longer trying to treat whatever is
Yep, the
whatever we're
patient has
facing.
decided. Yeah, the patient
And
has made that
palliative,
decision.
right? And palliative is no, we are still seeking medical treatment and we are getting covered, but we're interested in having some of that comfort care and services and support and coordination that are similar, but the big difference is I'm still pursuing treatment versus I've ceased treatment.
And I think I'm thinking of people who, they may need that for a period in their illness and then not need it. They may be fine and stable and managed, and they're in a good place and they don't need that service anymore. And I think it's worth mentioning, I want to just touch briefly on that with hospice. My mother was not doing well a couple years ago, and she signed up, she enlisted again hospice care because we thought, and she thought, let's have extra care, extra set of medical eyes on her coming to the house. And she improved, and she went, and they said, we don't think you need us. Like, there was a medication change, there was just more people assessing her, I believe. And she didn't need hospice care anymore. So I just want to say, like, things can change, and with both of those types of care.
So interesting. You really have had a variety of experiences. So you kind of talked about coverage and insurance. I want to talk about essentially the institution, the business of this space, because I think it probably comes in a variety of flavors. So what do you know about it? What can you share?
What I can say for sure is there are a lot of hospice organizations starting up, and there's a lot of choices out there. We're seeing more and more organizations come into the marketplace, so to speak. And it's important for consumers to be able to understand the differences. First of all, with hospice, there can be a nonprofit hospice organization or for-profit hospice organizations. So they both have to meet the core requirements of Medicare or Medicaid, those requirements. So you're going to get the same type of core benefits. But where it differs is nonprofit hospice, they're going to be able to provide services regardless of a patient's ability to pay. Whereas a for-profit may have different, is going to have some different criteria eligibility to be, get services. And so the, and they're a business model. So for-profit is, and I'm not saying anything negative, but they're just different. They have a business model. It's a private company. There's likely investors they have to report to, they are there to make a pro, they are serving, but also need to generate a profit. So they're just, I think, gonna look at things a little different when it comes to eligibility, where versus nonprofit. Nonprofits also tend to have inpatient residents. So, like in the organization I volunteer for, we have inpatient homes. They're residential homes for patients if they need to go there for their care. And so some of the for-profits, in my experience and knowledge, generally do not have that. So that's the main difference there.
And you kind of started by saying, regardless of whatever their business model or profit approach is, they need to take Medicare and Medicaid. I'm sure they're both similarly regulated and have to and comply with state and federal guidelines when it comes to this critical care. Good. Okay.
There's lots of requirements, and I'll have some other information I can share on that too.
Well, why don't you start? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that a family who wants to learn more about the options that are in their community, they can go to the medicare.gov website. And the way I get there is I go to that website, I go in the search bar and type in hospice, and that will lead you to a section within Medicare where you can type in your city and state, and it will pull up all the hospices that are registered in your community. It will tell you whether they are for profit or nonprofit, and it will also list their rating. So, and it will tell you based on the ratings, like family services, it breaks it down and it will tell you where that hospice stands in comparison to the national average. So it's a really great tool for families and patients to be familiar with the hospices that are in their community. And I think even though there might not be an immediate need in a family, I think it's good to know who's serving your community.
Well, you know what I like about that is getting back to kind of the top of the episode, right? When it comes time for us to face something and we don't know enough and we don't know where to start, that's a really fantastic tool to hear about to say, I don't even know who's available, let alone how do I choose, right? So, and it's not going to say, oh, hey, Kathy, this is the organization that's right for you, but it is going to give you some factors for you to consider, which sounds really helpful. But also, I love the idea. And again, you mentioned you had friends who were in a situation where they were not ready to hear kind of your expertise in this space, but the idea that we can become more knowledgeable about what's in our community when we come across talking with friends and family and neighbors who are up against something, and you say, oh, actually, I know a little something about this. Can I be of help?
And it's power, or knowledge is power, right? And I agree. So
I want to get a little more detailed about kind of comfort care. You've talked about a couple of things, and honestly, my perspective coming into conversations about hospice was like, oh, it's about kind of giving morphine so that the pain is less at the end. Like that's been my exposure for dying relatives. It's like, okay, the cancer's everywhere, up the morphine. But I'm confident that it's more than that. So again, kind of go through that list of what people are receiving or could receive.
Well, I think something that stands out to me is that a hospice nurse is going to come in and look at the medications that the patient is taking. Let's say there's been all these different medications. You see it in the room, all these bottles or the pill things lined up, and they're going to assess, like, at this phase in life, like, the last thing you want to be doing as a terminal patient is choking down a bunch of medicines that really don't need to be there anymore, right? So they're going to assess and look at what is essential to minimize the stress on the patient of having to take all these medications. So they're going to simplify and focus on medications that are going to be comfort providing. And that could be medications that will help with mental health, like anxiety medications. So they might introduce that or increase that to help, calm anxiety. And of course, what you mentioned with the morphine, they're going to assess that, but because for pain measures, but really just weeding out what else is happening, because a nurse has to be the one to do that. It can't be a home health care person, right? So that's one of the first things that jumps out to me. But then, and again, I'm speaking on personal experience, and then also bringing in the medical equipment, and it could be a hospital bed, or it could be like an air mattress. I've had actually clients that I've worked with who they've received an air mattress to help eliminate, like to make it easier to move, like for to beds when bed sores are a problem. So that's another comfort measure. And bringing in music therapy. Not all hospices have that. And pet therapy, there spiritual support, that's another. Those are all considered comfort measures. So it's an array, not just on the medical but pain management side, but also just on those other comforts that can be brought in.
Well, I think what you kind of outlined was a combination of, again, kind of like what can we remove because it's not providing value, or if it might be negative, but also what can we add, right? And it's really kind of considering both. You were talking about them. It had never occurred to me, right? Of course, having a nurse come in and say, "Hey, you're on cholesterol medication. We're kind of end of life. Like, I think your cholesterol's fine. We don't need you to take, and that's a big pill. We don't need you to do that anymore." Like, oh, of course. But everybody's like, I don't know. These are mom's 20
This is
medications.
what
Of
we've been
course, right. This is what we
taking.
do, right? And so the idea that somebody's going to come in and say, "All right, let's look at this table. What do you
What's
need,
essential?
right? What do you need today to get to tomorrow, to get to next week, to get to next month?"
Yeah, and we without hospice, we would not have known that, right? We would have just kept doling it out, right? Like, okay, time to swallow, and then just the challenge of that happening. So again, another value added of having that support.
And things like it was, you mentioned kind of, oh, you need to have a medical professional versus a kind of home health care. And I can think of home health care a little bit as daily care, right? Maybe it's bathing, maybe it's eating, maybe it's changing, daily living activities, things like that, which are still
Very
critical.
important, very important. The and hospice and palliative work, that's that coordination of care, having the home health care support is really helpful. I mean, to help with that, like you were saying, the bathing and even laundry, those daily living tasks. Especially, if someone doesn't have family or the family's not in a position to be able to give up their time to be there. So that home health aspect is really important in combination with having that medical nurse and or doctor. I mean, we have, every hospice has a medical director on staff to be reviewing the course of treatment and stepping in if there is something really, more higher L, situation to step in and help with that. So,
We're going to transition to the quicksand three in a minute, but I
Oh,
have a
okay.
kind of a couple last questions. One is there may be people who are listening today who feel very moved about the idea of being helpful in this space and service to others. You've mentioned kind of being a volunteer. I know you serve on a board, which is not everybody's volunteer journey, but what are ways that if people say, "Oh, I want to get involved and help people," what are some of the ways people do tend to volunteer with hospice that you know
Yeah,
of?
we have volunteers who I've met through that help at fundraising events. So let's say that's your thing in helping raise funds for your local nonprofit hospice, and you want to get involved in an activity that they're doing to raise funds, participating as a volunteer, maybe not fundraising, maybe it's just being a volunteer at an event that is geared towards raising funds. That's where I started, is volunteering at a golf outing, and it went from there. Also, we have volunteers who will go and visit patients, and sit with them and be there at the end of life. I mean, that's a real gift to have someone, if we can have someone bedside, being there with someone during that journey. We do have volunteers who've been trained to do that and be there. We have, as I mentioned earlier, our hospice has a residential hospice, and so we have volunteers that help go there, help maintain the home, are there to greet families, be there to answer questions. So there's an array of ways to help. I mean, even going in and helping with mailings. I mean, so I think that there is a avenue re based on an individual's strengths where they can give back to the hospice in their community.
Thank you. That is really helpful. And I do know some people who have really dedicated a lot of time and service to hospice organizations they're involved with. One in particular comes to mind who's she's a real champion, and she really considers it some of her most valuable life work. She in fact she does that. She is a greeter at a funeral home. She loves working with families. Right. She's been in this space for a long time, and
I
she's I'm
mean,
in awe of her.
when I get to retirement, on my list is to be a sitter. They call me a sitter, to be able to sit with someone, because I think it is a unique gift when someone is comfortable doing that, and I am, and so I feel that that will be something that I do when I slow down in my business, is to do that.
Good. That's great. All right, we're gonna switch to the quicksand three, and then when we come back, I'm gonna ask you if you could give one piece of advice to people who are listening about how you want them to think differently about hospice. What would you tell them? And so we'll put that at the end, but I want to give you that on notice. Okay, quicksand three, my three questions I ask all of my guests. And the first one is around kind of a productivity aspect, right? And I know you are, as an organizing and productivity gal, this is up your alley. What is a trick or technique that you use to get yourself unstuck and do something finally that you've been avoiding?
I love this question, and I do this on a weekly basis, probably, but I envision myself after the task is complete. Like, I envision how I'm going to feel and what that result is going to be. So that's my trick. I'm like, if I've been putting off something, I just have to stop and pause, visualize how good I'm going to feel, and also moving on with the result and moving on to the next thing.
It's a channeling future you kind of approach. I love it. Good. Next, and you may have already answered this question, but I'm gonna ask anyway. If time and history and money and skills and all sorts of things were not a factor, what is a career or job you might have liked to try?
Well, yes, when I talked about that sitting at with hospice or a death doula, that's been on my radar. But I will tell you, on the fun, like, big side, I would love to work for, I think it would be fun to be on the Formula One, the race company, and whether it be with a team or the organization, and have the opportunity to travel the world with that organization and be part of, like, doing logistics and also just seeing the world in places I've never been. And I just love watching, the F1 races when I can, or the Netflix series. And so I think that would be really fun and exciting.
So, for people who don't know what Formula One is, this is a race series,
Race
a race,
cars.
right? Like high-end Ferrari, right? The most expensive elaborate races with professional racing, and they have huge teams that are supporting everything from the pit to how are we getting from Lisbon to Abu Dhabi, right? All of it. That's so
Yeah, they go
fascinating.
to
I love it.
amazing places. There's
Yeah.
a lot there, and it would be cool just to be able to see how all that works. And I mean, even if it's about bringing sodas to the pit crew or something, I don't care.
You're in.
I just think it would be fun.
That is great.
Probably really hard. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's probably a lot of hard work.
I'm sure it is. And I'm sure it's hot and loud. I think those two things are true. And the last question, what is a way that when life gets chaotic, that you hit the reset button or recharge?
Gosh, that was a good question. I've been thinking about that one, and all I can think about is like sitting on the couch, having with my husband, having a Manhattan, watching some Netflix, and just taking pause. Like, that would be my reset.
I love that. And Manhattan's a bourbon drink, right? I know you're a bourbon drinker. I know that's your thing. I love it. And Kentucky, how could you not be?
I know.
So let's go back to that question that I led before we broke into that, which is what's some advice that you would want to give a family, loved ones who know that having a difficult conversation or making a difficult decision about whether or not it's time or whether or not we should, what do you want them to know and to kind of think about and give them comfort when they face that decision?
Yeah, I mean, I would say try to get a feel for what your family member or members would want when you're not in a crisis. There are tools out there that will help facilitate conversations on this that can make it fun about advanced care directives, but I think it's just knowing what hospice is about, being educated on the differences, the palliative care versus the hospice care. And I just would like them to know that they can go out there. There's lots of, I talked about the Medicare.gov, knowing what services are available to them in their community, and just knowing that enlisting hospice care is not giving up. It's not. And so I don't have magic words that would make that conversation easier, but I could say now taking the steps to educate yourselves about what it is the best advice that I could offer right now.
Thank you. Lori, thank you so much for being here on Surfing the Quicksand and sharing your very personal story and your passion about this. I really think that there are people who are listening today who learned a lot and will be having important conversations with their family too.
I hope so. Thank you, Kathy.
Lori's story, her personal story, of course, is a unique one. Having been through hospice conversations with family members in a number of different ways over time, and the fact that she's tapped into how important and valuable she feels these services are, enough to volunteer to be on the board of a very well-established organization and bring her expertise and her passion to how that whole place runs better is really just so impressive, right? I was glad that we had a conversation about how people can volunteer because a lot of people do get moved to serve others, especially in this most important part of the cycle of life. She's also going to share with me some questions that family members can ask when they are interviewing different hospice places or providers. And so we're going to put those in the show notes. I'm going to make sure that Medicare link about how to research those options in your neighborhood is also in the show notes too. I hope this episode actually brought more light than darkness to your day. I know we talk about some somber things here on Surfing the Quicksand, but I truly believe that by in growing our own knowledge and our own comfort with options and language, that it helps us have awkward and difficult conversations when we're not in crisis and not really just rely on having them when they're really difficult at its worst time when we are in crisis. So maybe today's conversation inspires you to have those awkward conversations a little earlier with those you love. Thanks for being here.